How you doing, Met fans? And welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arizzi. We have a special one for you today. In just a few minutes, we'll have Terry Collins welcome a Mets favorite to the show, none other than the Grandy Man himself. Curtis Granderson will join us today for a very cool Talking with TC. And also on today's show, a Never Forget story featuring Mets Hall of Famer and their former skipper, Bobby Valentine. And then if you remember a recent SNY telecast where Steve Gelbs and Keith Hernandez shared a hot dog together, a la Lady and the Tramp, and you thought to yourself, wouldn't that be a cool signed photograph to have for your collection? Well, today, courtesy of Coach's Collectibles, we will let you know how to get one. But before we go to all of that, let's talk about the ongoing mission of our friends at the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. While civilians were heading down the stairs of the Twin Towers on 9/11, first responders were climbing up those same stairs. To pay tribute to the heroes of that day, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has held its 10th tower climb at One World Trade Center. This past weekend, more than 1,200 people huffed and puffed their way up 2,226 steps. They raised money for all Tunnel to Towers programs, and that includes providing mortgage-free homes to Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children, and delivering specially adapted mortgage-free smart homes to catastrophically injured veterans and first responders. You can join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good by going to t2t.org. And the Tunnel to Towers Steel Across America Tour has completed more than a dozen stops, and the response has been overwhelming. People are moved to see and touch a steel beam removed from the rubble of the Twin Towers. The nearly 17,000-pound artifact is traveling by truck from New York to California and back. The steel tour will stop in Oklahoma City on June the 12th and in Scottsdale, Arizona on June the 17th. The goal is to make sure people never forget 9/11. You can find the steel tour schedule and information about the sacred column at t2t.org. Part of the Tunnel to Towers mission is to make sure we never forget the heroism and sacrifice of 9/11. That includes educating people who weren't even born in 2001. Tunnel to Towers is proud to announce a new class of student athlete advocates, and they include Juliana Mosca from Manhattan University, Chloe Trimandelis of Fordham University, Kayla Carino from Seton Hall University, and Casey Ryan from Jacksonville University. These college athletes will help the foundation reach a younger audience by sharing its goals. Three of the four advocates are children of New York City first responders, and all of them are committed to the Tunnel to Towers cause. To learn more about these young leaders and to donate $11 a month, please visit t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. We will be back with Terry Collins and one of the most beloved players ever to put on a Mets uniform, the Grandy Man, Curtis Granderson, right after this on behalf of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
I'm Terry Collins, former manager of the New York Mets. I do everything I possibly can to help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The new initiative to hand out college scholarships to these children from these home recipients, that has got to be a weight lifted off the shoulders of the parents, of the families. It's incredible. And you know, what an impact these kids someday are gonna make on society. It's because of what Tunnel to Towers does every day to help our first responders, our military and veterans. I've become good friends with a number of NYPD officers. I see what they go through on a daily basis. That we have a great country, but we need to never forget who's made it great. Just $11 a month will make a big difference. Go to t2t.org for more information on how you can help transform lives. Let's go Mets, and let's support Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Today on Talking with TC, we're happy to bring back to the Terry Collins Show for the first time this season one of the all-time favorites of Met fans. He's currently an in-studio analyst for TNT Sports, part of the TBS team covering Major League Baseball. Of course, he's remembered for his days on the field as a member of the 2015 National League champion New York Mets. Also played for the Tigers, Yankees, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Brewers, and Marlins. Three-time All-Star, former Silver Slugger winner, four-time Marvin Man of the Year, as well as a recipient of the Roberto Clemente Man of the Year in 2016. Ongoing charity work with the Curtis Granderson Foundation benefits inner-city children in Chicago and other cities as well. Our pleasure to welcome the Grandy Man, Curtis Granderson, back to the Terry Collins Show. Curtis, good to see you again.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for the intro.
Yeah, you know, Grandy, that's a long intro now. You know, all you're doing now is getting longer and longer. But
man, just trying to stay busy so I can stay out of trouble. That's the big thing. Yeah,
are you staying out? So are you spending a lot of time in Atlanta?
So I come down once a week. We have our Tuesday game of the week for the regular season. And then when the postseason comes around, it switches. One year we have the American League. Next year we have the National League. And then this year we'll be covering the American League in studio for the first round of the division series. And then last year we were back on site for the championship series, which is always fun. You know, you're in the stands, you're getting a chance to feel the home crowd. Hopefully it goes well for them, so you get that energy. If it goes bad for them, they empty out and it's just us on the field talking. So it's fun getting a chance to see it. It's a really good time.
So you like this? You like doing it, huh?
It's cool because, you know, I get a chance to watch the game and bring those years of just playing and experience on it and try to just break that down to the fan, because I am the fan now, you know, and what I would hopefully like to hear and see of what's going on and understanding on that side of it. It's not too demanding. You know, once a week, it's a different matchup every week, which is really cool. You know, I don't have the same team over and over again, which obviously does have its pros and cons, but it's always cool to have a different matchup each week out there.
You know, Curtis, I've always wondered about, you know, the guys that do that game of the week kind of stuff. I mean, the homework, when you know, you're running into a team that you haven't seen much of, the homework's got to be, you know, it's got to be kind of intense.
Tonight we have the Padres. This will be my first time covering the Padres. Now, of course, I've seen what they're doing and, you know, a little bit, but I don't know the full details about this squad. And that's where your stats guys come in. And I look at different things that may jump out, right? Are they leading in some category? Are they last in some category? Has there been some major news? Oh, so-and-so just hit 10 home runs yesterday. So I make sure I got those things. But the great thing about it is that I realized is that the stats part of it, which was the part I was the most scared about, because I don't know all these stats. There's certain terminology I still don't know. TCU, and I don't know what WOBA means. I don't know what any of that stuff means. But I still know the game. And when I've got a chance to talk to Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaquille O'Neal with what they do at the NBA on Inside, on TNT, who's, you know, our big brother on this show,
right?
They always told me, they said, look, everything that's happened on that field, you have seen, you have experienced. So talk about that, break that down. And that's something that nobody can mirror and match. The stats they can look up, they can find out who's hot, who's not, who's been playing well, or so on. I can hopefully give you the reason why they're playing well or why they're not playing well. So that's made it fun. So there's still homework, but it's not as intense and down to it as I thought it was going to be. But of course, I still need to know what's going on.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty funny for, you know, the years I managed, I'd get a call from Rick Sutcliffe. You know, Rick and I were teammates, and he would do one of our games in New York, and he'd call me and he'd say, hey, I haven't seen you guys play in 2 weeks. What's going on? You know, give me the inside. Tell me about who's pitching tonight. You know, what his pitches are. So I'm thinking, God, if you got to do that every week, that's got to be, you know, that's got to be pretty intense trying to gather all the stats. And, you know, Curtis, I got to tell you something. Now, obviously, I'm an old school guy, and I understand the importance of analytics to coaches. But, you know, we didn't need numbers to tell you who you couldn't hit. I mean, I wrote your name in a lineup every day, and I knew there had to be days when you'd say, ooh, this is not a good matchup for me tonight. Huh? Was there?
Yeah, I mean, you sit there hoping like, TC, why are you putting me in there today? This is not a good one. But then there's one like, I hope I'm in there. And then I think as you as a manager and us as players, you also get that sense. You see when someone walks in that clubhouse, is their energy up? Is their energy down? Right. Are they fatigued? Are we in a tough stretch here? Do they have something going on off the field that the analytics can't tell you about, but you know it, right? You've seen that player with their family. You know something may or may not be going on. You know what? I'm going to give them a day here. Or I know the numbers don't look great against this opponent, but he is swinging a great bet. I feel like he can't miss. I'm going to run with the hot hand and put him back out there. And everyone's going, why would you put this lefty out there against that lefty? Because he's 10 for his last 12. I got to stay with the hot bat. So I think sometimes you still have to blend the two. TC, you've been a great manager and a great coach, and you have years of experience. That's why Rick Sutcliffe was calling you. He could trust that you're going to provide the right information. That stuff still plays. Then you introduce the new way of looking at it. And I think whenever you have the blend of the two, those are the teams that tend to have the most success because they can trust and feel what's going on. Yes, the numbers are going to help shape and mold you, but there's still a gut and a feel side of it. For example, I always tell young kids and even fans of the game, watch a game and tell me if anyone on the field looks scared. And they go, what do you mean? I go, look at that player out there that's just sweating really hard and breathing really heavy. He is scared. I don't care what the numbers say in this moment. He is not going to succeed. And you can see that. You can feel that. So that's where your eye test really still has to come in. And you just have to pay attention to the game. He should probably be in this situation because the numbers say so. But he don't want to be out there in that situation because he's a little nervous for whatever reason it is that's going on. And then vice versa. Here's that player coming up that looks so intense and is so fearful. You better not throw the ball anywhere around the plate because he's going to hit it a mile. Those are things that you can just see.
Grandy, I totally agree. And that's why, I've said it for a long time, talk about, they're looking at, this is a bad match. There's times when guys like yourself, when you were swinging good, you didn't care who was out there.
That's it.
I mean, you didn't care if they were right or left-handed or threw over their top or through side. I mean, when you're seeing the ball and you're saying, hey, look, I'm everything's good. And there are other times when, hell, you could face the easiest right-hander in the world. You're just not seeing the ball good, And so and I've always said for a long time, I don't need numbers to tell me that. I don't need anybody to tell me, well, this is a bad matchup. I can remember, I'm sure you don't, but I remember one time I went up and said, hey, I got to get you a day off this week. And you just said, yeah, okay, because that's how you are. And you said, okay, which one do you have in mind? And I didn't have one in mind. I just thought, Christ, you played like 3 weeks in a row. I got to get you a day off. And yet it was hard to figure out when because I knew tonight if you went 4 for 4 or hit 2 homers, you're not taking tomorrow off.
Right.
You
want to be back in there.
Be back in there. And if you're not, you've got to walk in you up and say, really? What did you see yesterday you thought I needed today off? And that's, that's the battle that managers have. And that's where I think, I hear about, this new, they do it in the NBA now where, hey, look, you have to have a day off. And I'm thinking, my God, give me a day when my legs are sore. Not when they're stinking, I'm feeling fresh, even though the dates may coincide with, I got to get this guy a day off today. And that's the stuff that, and again, Curtis, I've also said this about one of the things that I was asked a long time ago by the commissioner. We were talking one day, and he said, what part of the game do you think needs to be fixed? And I said, travel days. I said, if we're going, and I can talk about this for an hour, but if there's a day, let's just say there's a day, we've got a night game, and then the next day we've got a Labor Day day game in Chicago, right? And Curtis Granderson plays 12 innings, And so he's running, playing center field, running around. He's tired. He's going to Chicago. He needs, there's going to be fans who are coming to that game to see this guy play. And I said to the commissioner, I said, that's the part of the game that everyone doesn't understand. People come to see the stars play. They come to see the stars play, and when you got a Curtis Granderson, a David Wright, a Michael Kadire, who go to Minnesota or places. I mean, they got to play those games. And I said, but you guys play all these night games, and I understand the money involved, the prime time, the cost for commercials. But those are the times when your star players, when they got to go to, there are certain places they got to go. They got to be in that lineup for me.
You know, you're a kid and your favorite player's out there. That's the reason why you wear the number on your back because of that player. I want to see that player play. And I remember I had some colleagues that lived in the Bay Area. And this is back when Michael Jordan is in his prime. And in the NBA, you play in your conference multiple times, but you only go East to West Conference one time. So Michael Jordan and the Bulls are going out to play the Golden State Warriors. And I think he was sick or something, didn't get a chance to play. fans were disappointed. Now, they knew he wasn't trying to miss the game, but now I got to wait till next year to see arguably the best basketball player ever. That's tough for the game. And sometimes that can be negated, like you said, if you switch the scheduling around. And TC, I know you have a bunch of games over the course of your career, but I remember we had a stretch. We were in LA or San Diego, and we're going up to San Francisco to play after our game. So it's a quick 45-minute flight. And I remember the Giants were in Atlanta playing a four-game set, all night games. And then they were going to travel from Atlanta to San Francisco to play us the game one. It was a regular season game. Now, for us, this is great, right? We're going to be rested. They're going to be fatigued. And I'm sitting there looking at it going, I know the money is better at night. But right. They had three night games in a row. You couldn't have bumped that game from 7 to 5 or 7 to 4, even a day game. And especially now, going back to our first conversation, how do you blend the old and the new? Ratings are high in the evening. People go to school. People work. They get off at 5 o'clock. They may not make it to the game at 7. But work from home now. We're doing this call remotely. People have the ability to adapt and adjust now more than ever before. So if that game has to bump up an hour or two, I think you can offset some of that stuff with the value that you're going to keep your players healthy on the field, because that's the big thing. This one Thursday night game in Atlanta could have adjusted 2 hours to get it ready for that weekend, because it could have been a holiday weekend. I don't remember exactly when it was, but people could have been gearing up their travel schedules, ready to go to see this game. And here comes this squad rolling in at 3-4 in the morning. And you, as the manager, you got to get some of these players off. So I definitely like seeing the travel stuff at least be addressed, at least be adjusted when you can. You can't do it always, but with 162 games, there are some wiggle room in there where you can be able to get it done.
I totally agree. So tell me about the foundation. It's going gangbusters, I know. Are you still heavily involved in that also? And how do you find the time to do both of them?
I stay busy with it getting going, and it's amazing we're talking about it right now. We're in the midst of this September, Saturday, September 19th. We're doing a celebratory brunch. We're going to be celebrating 20 years of the Curtis Granderson Foundation and 10 years of the Chicago Baseball Educational Academy. It's going to be in Chicago. It's a big thank you to everybody. You know, all the cities and teams I played for helped me continue to grow this thing and move it and help so many kids and families, not only across this country, but I played in Toronto. So this is an international celebration. So really cool that we're getting things going. We just wrapped up our Grandy Man Youth Tournament. So 12U and 14U. Baseball and softball, over 450 kids in the city of Chicago. And what's really cool, especially as we sit here now with some of the things with youth sports just constantly being more and more expensive, this tournament cost each team $50. If the team couldn't afford it, we waived it. They got a chance to play at the College Stadium in Chicago, both the softball and the baseball fields. And from what I'm hearing, these are some of the best fields that they're going to play on, including all those tournaments where they go and spend a ton of money. We got the best view in all of baseball in Chicago. So to get those kids out there getting a chance to play, it's just really cool to see them enjoy it. So 20 years for CGF and 10 years for CBEA is happening here.
Congratulations, pal.
Thank you. Tremendous.
So listen, there's one big elephant in the room that I want to run by you. CBA is coming up. Oof. I mean, you were involved in that stuff, you know?
Yes.
And so, you know, Grandy, obviously, when I got in the game, you know, matter of fact, I can tell you when I was managing in AAA, they gave me the major league minimum for my salary, which was $60,000. You know, now it's going to be $1.5 million or something for a first-year player. I mean, tell me as a player, when you were going through this, what was your thought process? Was it about the game? Was it saying, oh, my God, you know, how am I going to get through this? You know, I told somebody the other day, you know, it was one thing in 94 when the last big one they had when – the Stars were making $3 and $4 million. They're making $30 and $40 million today. And mm-hmm. And the fans were mad back then, 94. They if it wasn't for McGuire and Sosa, they may never have come back, you know, but Now, also, now guys are making $30 and $40 million. In the, what are the fans going to think if they don't play? I mean, did that ever enter your mind as a player when that stuff was going on?
It's interesting because the first time I got put into a role with the Players Union was my first full season in the big leagues. It's 2006. I get voted in. I say, yes. Okay, what am I doing? I don't know what's going on. I got to learn as I'm going here. And I was trying to learn tidbits like you told me. How did we get to this point? Where did we start? Wow, salaries were that low before. We had arbitration at this point. We'd had free agency at 10 years. You know, all these different things that were just valuable knowledge to understand that the players before me fought to get it to where I'm at right now. And at that time, the league minimum was 326, I think it was. Let's fast forward now. As you're mentioning, the proposal's out there to get the minimum to 1.5. So this is credit to the players before just helping shape and mold to get it to that point. Now, the uncertainty of what may happen if there happens to be a lockout here at the end of this season, the reality is that is a possibility. The big thing as a player, I got to control the things I can control right now. It's now June 2nd. We got a game tonight. Let me focus on that. If we get to this position, hopefully I'm positioned myself that if unfortunately it gets to that point, I can put myself in a space to be able to survive it. Now, from a player and an owner standpoint, and as we talked about at the beginning, now as a fan, whatever ultimately happens, this is going to be a business decision. It's not going to be pretty. There may be a lockout come December 1st, but with youth participation up, viewership up, attendance come opening day 2027, there needs to be baseball. You talked about 94 and the strike happening. I was 13 years old when that happened. I was enjoying the game. I was participating in a bunch of different things and activities. But if you think about, that's a very formational year for a youth athlete. A lot of kids stopped playing between the ages of 12 and 13. You also had the World Cup happen in 94. The NBA was growing, right? The Houston Rockets had just won a world championship after the Bulls had just three-peated. So all these different things that pulled people away from the game, and to your point, needed Sosa and Maguire to bring it back. Let's fast forward. It's now 2026. World Cup is happening again this year. It's amazing how it always comes back in full circle.
It is.
The UFC is popular than ever. The NFL is popular than ever. The Knicks are in the NBA Finals. So you have all these other interests now that you didn't have before. You can't afford to play with it and say, oh, if we miss, everyone's going to come back to us. I've seen it even in the podcast space. One of the reasons why successful podcasts are the way they are is because they're consistently in front of you. As soon as you take some time away and people forget about you, they're not coming back. And I'm afraid that we could be in a situation like that this time around with baseball if they don't get it done and there's not baseball come opening day 2027.
I 100% agree with you. And I will tell you something. There is, people don't understand the stress put on these player reps. It is unbelievable. I had, you know, back in 94, the player rep, I was managing the Astros, and the player rep, you know, he was Chris Donalds was his name. Great guy, great back. Oh man, one of the best off the bench players I ever had. And you know, he came in. He said, "You know, I'm stuck in the middle here." He said, "Because this is going to hurt me a heck of a lot more than it's going to hurt Jeff Bagwell or Craig Biggio." And he said, "But I have to remember who I'm representing." And I thought, "Wow, what a ton of pressure on that poor guy." Yeah. And I can't imagine you in your first year being put in that kind of a situation. That tremendously is unfair.
I remember it's the World Series in 2006, and that's when the 2006 collective bargaining agreement was finishing. And I'm getting brought in saying, hey, do you agree and sign off on this? Again, I'm trying to play in a World Series. I'm trying to establish myself as a big leaguer. I'm making a decision that may affect us for the next 5 years, and I got to say yes or no. And I'm learning terms I don't know. Like at that time, collusion was still a very big topic. I had never heard that word before. And I got Kenny Rogers, who has affected by collusion, coming at me, Grandy. Hey, what do they got about collusion? What are they talking about? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out, you know? So that it is definitely a ton of pressure. And then even now, as bargaining is happening, the reps that are involved, either you play for the Mets or the Yankees, or you're in town playing those two teams, are going to bargaining sessions at around this time, leaving that, then coming to join their team to get ready to play tonight. So it's constantly happening. It is stress. If anyone listening here has been a part of a union or has worked with a union, it's the same type of thing. You're trying to set it up for so many people. And that's where a lot of people forget. There's only 30 owners, but there's over 750 current major league ball players, plus the 40-man rosters and all that stuff that you're trying to shape and mold what this looks like for them. Now, it's also not easy for these 30 owners. All of them have different agendas, different mindsets, different markets. They're trying to get things figured out for themselves as well. So it is a lot of back and forth, just trying to see what's ultimately best for the game. But I think the biggest thing, you definitely want to continue to get these players out there. Like we talked about it, you want the stars out there. You want them on the field. You want to keep them healthy. Here's a chance to grow the game. You want to make sure if you can watch it, everyone can see it. I think the blackout situation is a big topic of conversation, especially since I'm on the media side now. You want the fans to see you. I should be able to turn the game on and it should be on. I shouldn't have to search 15, 20 different platforms trying to find it, because certain generations are going to stop. If it's not on, that means it's not on. So there's a couple fundamental things I think that can be shaped out. And here's the thing, as players are making the type of money that they're making, let's not forget, somebody has to pay that money. And in order to pay it, it means that they can afford it. So if someone has a $700 million contract, they thought, oh yeah, I can afford this. And they paid that contract out. So let's not forget that part of it either.
Yeah, I know you're right. But that, you know, one of the things, and I, John and I were talking, you know, certainly there's got to be, you know, I believe in a little bit of a balance, you know, try to make competitiveness good. But I don't understand how some of these small market teams where they're going to, if this thing gets, where they have to have almost a $200 million pay, they can't afford that.
Hey. You know how math works, right? You know,
yeah.
If all of a sudden I'm at one and you're telling me I got to go to 10, how do I go from one to 10 real quick? I look at the numbers right now, depending which salaries you look at, I think there's about 8 or 9 teams that have to come up, you know, anywhere from 20 to $100 million. That's a lot. That's real dollars. You know, that's like how do they get there, you know?
And you know, but you brought it up, Curtis, you brought up the games at an all-time high. Because that's why they can black you out. Because yeah. If you're a big fan, which I am, I gotta go find a network and spend my $20 so I can watch the game, because I want to see this guy pitch, or I want to see this, you know. And so I'm willing to do that. But man, I'll tell you, I'm scared to death that they're gonna run the game. Something's gonna happen. And just like you said, fans are gonna go elsewhere. You know, yeah. I saw what happened in '94. You know, we opened up in 95, and in the Astrodome, there couldn't have been 11,000 people at the game. The fans were so mad.
So keep in mind, not only are they mad they don't get a chance to see their favorite players, but the economy is the way it is. I mean, the number of conversation I'm having about people with the gas prices right now, this is just gas. And then you go to the grocery store and you're having those prices. And then you have, if you're fortunate enough to travel, those prices. And then you're going to have owners and players arguing over millions of dollars. It's hard for them to go ahead and have sympathy for you in that situation. And I totally understand it. So if it were to get to that situation like it did in 94, I can't blame the fans for saying, nope, it's going to take me a while for you to get my money back in this situation, because it is a fan first game. We don't get a chance to do any of this stuff if those 30 to 40 to 50,000 fans every night don't show up at Citi Field, don't turn on the TV when they get home from work. I mean, you worked with Jim Leland. Jim Leland's one of the best. And I remember when we were in Detroit and the recession was hitting hard there. And I remember him saying to us, he goes, don't forget, when these workers come home, and they're trying to figure out, can they pay their bills? Are they going to have a job? For those 3 hours when you're on the field, you're giving them a sense of hope and a sense of excitement that just pull them away from the realities that are out there. That's how a lot of people view sports. It gets their mind off all the challenges that are there. We can't forget that. So I think that has to be a constant reminder in the back of the owner's hands and back of the player's hands and everyone in the middle. If the fans don't show, we have no game.
I agree. Yeah, that's so true. So true. Well, listen, I know John's got some questions for you, because I know we're concerned about the Mets at the moment. The granny side.
Thank you, TC. Yeah, we are have been concerned about the Mets, and Curtis, I mean, you've obviously get a chance to see all the major league teams, you know, in your job as the analyst. And the assessment for the Mets this season and the season that they're having right now, in your opinion, what are the reasons for the most disappointing start in New York in recent memory?
I think there's a couple things that flowed into us. One, New York is a tough market. The pressure and expectation is always going to be high, especially after what happened, unfortunately, last year. You're riding high, things are going well, we're about to do it, and then there's just this big collapse that finishes strong. So you're okay, we can't have that happen again. Let's get out hot, let's get it going. We got some new players, some people have switched, coaches are changing. We have all these new pieces in there. Let's get the ground running. The challenge, though, when you add a lot of new, sometimes change, I feel is always a good thing, but sometimes it does take some time to get it all going right. For example, TC, you know my first year with the Mets wasn't great, right? I'm coming over there trying to get situated, trying to bring over what I've done with the Yankees, saying, okay, can I do this? I'm batting behind David Wright for the first time. I'm putting pressure on myself in addition to the pressure that everybody's expecting for me. I think some of that has happened as well. And then you have, again, a lot of change. So there's a lot of people just understanding each other, how to learn and move, right? It takes some time for TC and I to know, can I joke with him? Can he joke with me? Am I always serious? Am I not? That takes a few days. That takes a few weeks. That takes a few months. So I think that's starting to figure itself out. Then you got to get all the pieces back healthy at the same time. You know, we haven't had the superstars on the field consistently day in and day out. So hopefully that starts to happen. And what's crazy about the unfortunate event of last year, it shows you that anything is possible, including this year. For the Mets to be where they were and to finish 13 games back last year, you look and go, okay, if we can just hover and we can just maintain, we're just over the third of the way through the season, we got two-thirds left. If we can have a solid push to All-Star break, then that second half of the season, we can do what was done to us last year. So it's still possible. You're not out of it yet. You just got to continue to ride the wave and stay confident week at a time. Get your players hot here. Get them healthy here. Run through a couple stretches. And I think for the next month, everyone outside of this current series, and I think there's one series at the end of the month, is ahead of you in the National League. Win a series here. Win a series there. Win a series here. You can start gaining ground both in the wild card and in your own division.
Yeah, Terry and I were talking before we started recording about, you know, the softness of the Mets schedule over the last few weeks. But now they're going to be playing the competitive teams. They're going to be playing the Braves. They're going to be playing the Phillies, you know. So now the schedule gets a little bit tougher for a team that's still been very streaky. I mean, not only the 12-game losing streak they had earlier in the season, but they're winning four games, then they're losing four games, then they're coming back. So the inconsistency and the streakiness has certainly been a part of what's going on with the franchise and the team this year, and also those wholesale changes that were made. Were you surprised at all when they let all their coaches go and then they lost these legacy players like Alonso and Nimmo? What was your feeling on, wow, they really just cleaned house and got rid of, they just tore it down.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts there. And you go, okay, there's got to be a method to the madness. You got to figure there's a reason why they're doing it. I don't know, right? I haven't had a chance to talk to the front office staff about what that is. But there's a lot of pieces that have been there for a very long time. And people got accustomed to them and they knew who they were and how they were, both from a coaching standpoint and a player standpoint. So to have those players go, it is a little interesting to fill those voids. Yes, people can do it. People change teams all the time, whether it's through trades, whether it's through free agency. So it's not uncommon, but it is, you know, very unique to see the amount, the volume that had happened, especially for the number of coaches. I mean, typically, you know, throughout the course of my 16-year career, I've had one situation where they axed everybody and then you brought everybody back in. A new staff back in. But then for the most part, it would be one player or one coach here would switch a role, or maybe, you know, I'm going to step away for a little bit. Then I switch teams. So that's new for me. But that team system has been pretty much in place. And again, there's one change here and one change there. So it is very interesting to see that play out. but it just needs some time. You know, I think we're getting there. That could hopefully start to add to that level of consistency that you might start to see here in a little bit. But so just allow some time to stay there. Try not to put too much pressure on what has already happened. That's done with. You can't do anything about that 12-game losing streak you had earlier in the season. It's over. People are going to talk about it, but you need to be focused on what's in front of you right now.
Exactly. I wanted to discuss with you, obviously, you had one of the best managers ever in Terry Collins. And it seems like managers like TC are not really prominent anymore. I mean, the way the game has changed, the way analytics has come into play on a daily basis. Compare the days when you played under TC and the managers that are now in the game. Have we seen the end of managers like TC in Major League Baseball?
I think it's getting closer to the end. I don't think it's there yet because you've seen success. You know, Bruce Bochy goes with the Texas Rangers and wins a World Series there. And that in TC, you know, that's that style. That's that generation. I'm going to see the players. I'm going to trust them. I'm going to ride with what I feel. And we're going to go ahead and have some success. You are also going to bring in some new, like, hey, wow, there's a person that just speaks the language a little differently. That's a little bit closer in age that can relate to it. But I think do think you can have a hybrid. You know, if you go, hey, I want a younger manager, I maybe couple that with a more experienced bench coach, you know, a mix in the middle of the hitting coaches and pitching coaches. I think that's probably a really good recipe to be able to have. However, you know, for whatever reason, I think there's starting to just be more and more of a gap in this space. But I definitely think there's value. Experience is something that you just can't replicate. You know, if you were to say to me, hey, Grandy, I want you to manage. I know baseball, but I've never managed, right? Like, I'd be still day one for me when I come out there. And all the people that know a ton about the game, their first game managing, it will be day one for them versus someone who's got 10 years of experience, 15 years of experience. I think that changes a lot of things, especially if they've been around it. For example, there's a person right now, DeMarlo Hale. I think he would be a great manager for any organization. He's been on teams that have won. He's been around. Everyone loves him. No one has anything bad to say about him. And in that bench coach role, you're basically doing a lot of that stuff. You're seeing how the manager works and how they operate. So, you know, there's people that I think could fall into these roles very well, but for some reason, they either get overlooked or they move past them for something. And I look at it this way. If a team has been bad, you're probably not going to get much worse. So here's a chance where you can switch it up and try it out. And if it doesn't work, we've already been bad. So now we move it in forward. But if it works out, you continue to move forward with it. So I'm hoping we're not at the end yet. I do think there's some great managers, potential managers, that if they wanted to do it, they could do it and do a great job. And then for the other ones that don't have the experience, you also blend them in as well, because I think they could also be deserving for these positions as well.
Yeah. One final question and one final thought and memory for you. Obviously, with the advent of replay and ABS, there aren't the types of arguments that we had years ago, especially in the days of TC managing the Mets. And that leads me to this anniversary of sorts. Last week was the 10-year anniversary of the game where the Dodgers were in town. In 2016, Noah Syndergaard on the mound. He throws a pitch that goes behind Chase Utley. He gets tossed out of the game. Terry comes out, gets tossed, and then he and Tom Hallion get at it in an argument that went viral after the audio was released. So I want to ask and get your thoughts and memories of that anniversary 10 years ago when the ass in the jackpot and you got to give us a shot now lives in baseball history is probably the most viewed argument in the history of the game. So give us your personal recollection about that day.
You know, it's so great that we sit now that you could find this stuff, right? It's not gone. When they say it's on the internet forever, it's out there. So I saw it pop up recently. You just got to smile and laugh. But the thing about the game, the way it was in that time frame, was there may have been a retaliatory situation that everybody was anticipating. But the big thing was when you're going to do it, when the time's right. So this is all stemming from 2015. and the unfortunate incident that put Ruben Tejada on the injured list at that point. So do you retaliate at that point? Maybe not. So now it's almost, you know, a half a season, a full year later, and here's an opportunity to do so. And you got someone that throws 100 miles an hour. And I don't know if Noah decided to do it on its own. I don't know if it was scheduled. I wasn't in the pitcher's meetings. But boom, there comes the ball. Whew, it flies out. Chase is standing there. I'm assuming he was anticipating it as well. And then you start to throw everybody out the game. Now, Terry, you'll have to clear up for me. I don't think there were warnings issued before the start of the game. No. And obviously, if there's not, then you got every right to be mad. Like, you got to give us a warning. Like, what if it did slip? I mean, guys do throw balls to the backstop, you know, very frequently. And then they're going. And I think Neil Walker makes himself into the argument as well. So he's coming in trying to defend as well. And I don't know if I'd either batted or no, I had to be on defense. So I'm in the outfield, so I can't come close to that point. So I didn't get a chance to be firsthand in on it. But I've always liked arguments and ejections. I think the fans eat them up. I think it just, as a player, of course the situation's heated, but then what's stemming from it gives you a little excitement. Also, maybe a couple laughs here and there, depending on how it all plays out. And then you go out there and play. So I think there's a place for it. I hope it remains because I do think it's always done tastefully, respectfully. Now, there may be some language in there, but I don't think Terry had any disrespect for the umpire that was doing it and vice versa. And I'm sure the next day when we went back out there, their paths crossed. They said what's up to each other, and we continue to keep moving on from it. So I hope we still have some of it. We're starting to have a lot less of it, but I do think that side of it fans do enjoy, and so do we as players. We like it as well.
Yeah, I bring it up because, you know, we've had Terry and Tom together on this show reviewing it 10, you know, all these years later. They did an autograph signing and a panel up in New York together. So they remain close friends, but everyone remembers that. I mean, the lines, Terry, at QBC in December, you and Tom together for the first time, massive crowd. And Terry hears about it every day to this point because that viral video, I mean, just on our personal social media and Terry's pages, hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube. People bring it up. And the reason, you know, we're all 10 years later, here it is, the anniversary, because it reignited it again. And so everyone is kind of like, the entertainment value of it alone lives forever. And Terry think about and Tom. This.
I don't even know, Terry, do you know if we won that game or not?
We did not.
Okay. Right. Like, I don't remember the results of the game, but I remember that.
Yeah, we remember the argument.
Unfortunately, Randy, we did not be, matter of fact, Chase hit two home runs later in the game. So,
we hyped them up, you know. We did. The bear that we didn't need to poke. So
we did. And, you know, you were right. You know, the one thing about the game, and I'm sure, I mean, all the success you had in the game, was there ever a time you went to home plate and you said, you know, you might have hit a home run in a big situation that night? But the one thing, you know, the one thing you did, Granny, when you played the game the right way. You ran balls out. You ran to your position. You know, you didn't flip your bat in the air. You didn't, you know, do the stuff that today is taken for granted. You didn't do anything against that showed up the other team. And, you know, the only thing that stemmed from was obviously the bad slide that Chase had into Ruben. So we knew something was going to happen. I knew something was going to happen. Again, throw behind him, but, you know, get ejected. But, you know, after that, obviously, you know, I don't know if they warned each team then. Right. So I'm shocked that somebody on our team didn't, you know, pay the price for it because, you know, Chase, even though we didn't hit him, he's a big star on that team. So anyway, I think those days are going. Like I say, once in a while you'll see a pitcher who gives up a home run or back-to-backs and gets mad and throws at somebody. But I think those days, again, are starting to fall away. You know, there's so much movement anymore, Randy, from player team to team. You know, there are guys now that, you know, share the same agent or were teammates last year. Now they're opposing each other. And the days of Bob Gibson telling, you know, Orlando Cepeda, hey, you're not a Cardinal anymore. That's why I'm drilling you in the back. Those days are gone for me. I think they're all over with. So, but I've had a tough time living it down. And I'm just glad you didn't get hurt in the middle.
It is a scary feeling when you're like, okay, are they going to throw at me at this one? And then sometimes you're up there like this. Oh, they throw a ball right down the middle of the plate. Like, okay, they're not coming at me. But it does make it, and it is so much different. I had this conversation with a colleague recently, and he said, hey, I just feel like the players from, you know, that are 60, 70, 80 years older were just so much more intense. I said, to that point, right, they didn't change teams very frequently. They didn't all get together in the offseason and work out. So we knew of each other, but we knew we were going to battle against you this year. We were going to battle against you next year. It's different when once we battle each other and now we're teammates. Right. Now, all of a sudden, you know, the animosity we have goes out the window a little bit. So, for example, Nick Swisher and I were teammates with the Yankees, and I had played with another teammate by the name of Jack Hanahan. So Jack Hanahan and Nick Swisher were in the Big Ten. Jack went to the University of Minnesota. Nick Swisher was at Ohio State, and they had a brawl, he said. Everyone's throwing and everyone's involved, and they hadn't spoken to each other until they were teammates with the Oakland A's, and they looked at each other, they shook hands, and they became best friends at that point in time. But they had this hatred towards each other that didn't get mended until they were teammates again. So being able to have teammates, you know, that can change up a lot of different things for all that stuff. I think that kind of smooths a lot of it out right now, you know, the way we are.
Randy, I'll tell you a real quick one. You know, I spent all those years with the Dodgers, and obviously the Dodgers and Giants hated each other for years and years and years. And so when Marischal hit John Roseboro over the head with the bat the one time, remember that?
Yep.
So 10 years later, Marischal's a Dodger. And Johnny Roseboro's still catching. And they said it took all of spring training for those two even to speak to each other. And by the end of the season, they drove to the ballpark together. You know, they were best buddies. So
baseball bringing it together. Happen,
but it's a crazy game. Listen, I'm going to let you go. I know you got a big day today. And again, thanks so much for coming on. You're the best. Wish you the best and keep everything going and stay in it for a long time. The game needs the guys like Curtis Granderson to stay in it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Always good to see you. I like the blue and orange on the screen. Hopefully that could be enough to get the Mets consistent, to get them back in it. It's not over yet. Just got to get it rolling and going. But thanks again for having me on.
All right, Granny. Thank you, pal.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Always a pleasure to get to talk to the man who meant so much to the Mets, to Terry Collins, and to baseball, Curtis Granderson. A great segment with the Grandy Man. And now we bring you another Never Forget story, remembering the 25th anniversary of 9/11 and those in the New York baseball community who will indeed never forget that tragedy. Here is Mets Hall of Famer and former Mets manager Bobby Valentine on his memories of the day he saw Ground Zero for the first time after the 9/11 attacks. And after that, a story of the brand new Tunnel to Towers opening of their Veterans Village in Atlanta. Let's go to those stories right now.
Ground Zero was such that you couldn't maneuver a truck through. The only thing that could go through is a sedan. So the police cars took the back seats out of the police cars. And that's how they transported things from Shea Stadium to Ground Zero. Well, one night at like midnight, I think the second night I was there, there's a little room in the front seat. We didn't have to pack the car full to the brim, and I got up in the front seat and went down with them. And, you know, there was still soot on the cars this high as we're walking in from, you know, where St. Mark's is, because couldn't move or any further through. There's, you know, supply tents and first responders areas that were set up, but the streets weren't negotiable. So you had to do it by foot. And now by the time I get toward where you could look around the corner and see the rubble, you could smell it. By the time I got there, the soot on my pants was up to my knees, from the burned ash. And I'm looking down like it's a snowstorm, and then looked up and it was still smoldering. They had the beacons of lights on at night. And I became paralyzed. I just looked and still. And on these hills, these mountains, were all these people running up and down, thousands of what looked like ants on a mountain, side, going up and in and coming out filthy black, covered with soot. You could barely see the whites of their eyes, everything head to toes. And a lot of these people would get hosed down, take off their clothes and put on new clothes that we would bring down from Shea Stadium. That rescue time that obviously never rescued what we thought we would was one of the most remarkable feats in American history. To see people doing what they were doing 24/7 and never being rewarded for probably the most gallant and dangerous, and because at the time you didn't know this wasn't over, right? It was tiresome, it was challenging, it had never been done before, and they were lining up to do it. It's amazing.
I want to speak to you all about a promise that the Tunnel to the Towers Foundation made back in late 2022. A promise to eradicate homelessness amongst the 50,000 veterans who are struggling nationwide.
When Frank first started to float this idea of eradicating homelessness of our veterans, of course you take it seriously.
To see these veterans taken off the street and to be given a dignified place to live and all the resources they need was incredible.
St. Francis of Assisi says, "We start by doing what's necessary. Then we do what's possible. And suddenly we're sitting here in our second veteran village. Nothing is impossible."
What a beautiful day to celebrate a great milestone for Atlanta and the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, a beacon of hope for so many in need.
Actually, we were very nervous on taking it on. When you take somebody off the street, it's a lot more than that. They need all the help. The big question for us, can we do that? And we said, yes, we have to. You know why? Because it's unacceptable to leave one homeless veteran on the street.
This was a hotel. We saw the possibilities of having a wonderful place of renovation for our heroes. Tunnel to Towers is providing a model for the nation. We want to deal one-on-one with our heroes.
Having a safe space that reinstills that dignity, honor, and respect is paramount for that care, and that's what we're providing here.
We must provide the services on site or have the ability to get them the services they need, and Tunnel to Towers checks all those boxes.
It's a way to help them assimilate back into society to have a thriving life, and that's the goal.
When we made a promise to America that we're gonna eradicate homelessness amongst our veterans, we can only do it by the generosity of so many people that are watching this today.
It's the perfect public-private partnership where the public can step up and donate land. We can then go and build a village.
Go to t2t.org and donate $11 a month.
Those veteran villages are beautiful, and all that Tunnel to Towers is doing and building is part of their goal to eradicate veteran homelessness in our country, and we know they will not stop until they finish the mission. And Bobby Valentine has not forgotten, as you heard from him in that bonus footage from the T2T documentary, Never Forget How Baseball Helped Heal New York. You can still stream the entire documentary anytime on demand at the Terry Collins YouTube channel. And if you've not seen it yet, I highly recommend that you do. It's a powerful film of that time period with stories and video never before seen. Time to tell you about our friends at Coach's Collectibles, your source for guaranteed 100% authentic pieces of Mets history. Our friend Dominic over at Coach's Collectibles has been very, very busy, and this week there are some great new offers for you, the listeners and viewers of the Terry Collins Show. Just a couple of days ago, the Mets rookie sensation pitcher Christian Scott appeared on Long Island for his very first public signing, and it went wonderfully. It was at Mulcahy's out on Long Island, and he's got a number of items that are just being put up at CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com, and they include a beautiful number 45 Mets jersey with Christian Scott signing it and inscribing it with the date of his first major league win. There is a beautiful black and silver reflector rookie card of Christian Scott that's signed in Mets orange, which is also just fabulous. Other rookie cards are there as well, signed by Christian, 8x10 photographs, a number of those in different poses. And of course, the official baseball with Christian Scott signing for his first MLB win. And also there are balls with his major league debut on it as well, which took place last year, actually. So a number of Christian Scott autographed items. And once again, it was his very first ever public signing. And now those items are available from this rookie sensation at CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, if you have not seen the hilarious moment when SNY Steve Gelbs and Keith Hernandez had a Lady in the Tramp moment on a recent broadcast, let's take a look at what happened when they shared a hot dog on live TV.
CN.
What is this? This is the Glizzilla, okay? $45 for this monster, boys. It is 2 feet, an entire pound of beef. Let me try and pick this up.
You can't do that with one hand. Here, let me hold the box for you.
Okay, thank you. So this is on a brioche bun, 19 inches. It's unbelievable. Lady in the Tramp?
No.
I don't like relish. Is that? I hope that's not for one. You're bringing back memories, you know, Steve.
Steve, you're a mess. I'm
trying to wipe this off. I'll give it a 6.3.
Can I have a little tip right there?
You know, people would love this if we did Lady and the Tramp.
Just there's wait. No chance. You really going to do this?
If you get Keith to do this, I'll be shocked.
All right, Keith, here we go. Hold on.
I guess
ready?
Just the end. What's Lady and the Tramp?
They share. Share a hot dog.
You know that image is going to live forever. You're never going to be able to live that down, either one of you.
For Keith, he won't be able to live it down. For me, it's a career highlight.
Well, Dom at Coaches Collectibles got both Steve and Keith on the phone, and they have agreed to sign a photo of that moment, which we're going to show you right now. And they're taking pre-orders for this authenticated, autographed 8x10 of the Mets broadcasters sharing this moment and this humongous hot dog. It's signed in orange with the inscription by Steve, "Let's be frank." And that, of course, is his regular segment on the Mets broadcast where he rates hot dogs all around the country. So that is inscribed by Steve. Pricing for this item, which is in limited quantities, is $99, and that includes both autographs, Keith and Steve, an inscription from Steve, which is about the hot dog platform that he has on television. There's authentication, and domestic shipping is also included. And don't forget, 10% of all sales from our show that we generate for them go to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Use the promo code TCSHOW and go to CoachesCollectiblesNewYork.com. That's CoachesCollectiblesNY.com and place your order. And be sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well. Well, let's talk about next week's show. We bring back Howie Rose, the radio voice of the Mets, for a special Talking with TC. And I have to admit, in this one, I get a little bit involved because I found out that Howie had a big bucket list item crossed off when he met Beatle Paul McCartney recently. And he actually left the booth in the middle of a game to do that. Howie tells that incredible story and how Mets owner Steve Cohen made that dream come true for him. So that is next week right here on the Terry Collins Show. And you can follow the show on Facebook. I have to really just give shout outs to everyone who has followed the Terry Collins Show on Facebook and all the response we've gotten. And we've gotten over 1 million views on Facebook in just the last 30 days. It's incredible. So please, if you want to follow Terry on Facebook, just look for the Terry Collins Show there. Join the community because out of all the platforms that we have on social media, the Facebook platform is the best for fan interaction with each other. So everyone knows Facebook. Everyone has a Facebook account. And this is a way where fans of this show, fans of Terry Collins, fans of the Mets, fans of baseball can interact with each other because we put content up there literally every day. So subscribe now to also our YouTube channel because we put content up there every single week as well. That is youtube.com/The Terry Collins Show. You can also follow us on Instagram as well. So our social media has been really blowing up, and want to thank each and every one of you for that. That is going to wrap up this edition of the program. Thanks to our creative director, Marsh, for the great work he does each and every week right here at the Terry Collins Show. Also, our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week, everyone.